This is Kelly Henderson, and you are listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. This week, my guests are Ashley Eicher and Hunter Kelly, who are co-hosts of the hit Nashville podcast, All Our Favorite People. I've also been friends with this duo for years, which I do believe you'll be able to hear in the tone of this podcast. We bounce from topics of Ashley and her pageant days as Miss Tennessee to Hunter's deep relationship and fascination with Naomi and Wynonna Judd. We covered pop culture hot buttons such as Aaron Carter's meltdown and also addressed the moment when Beyoncé stopped using words publicly. They both told me their best and worst interview experiences, and from people who have been employed by everyone from Rolling Stone to ABC, they had quite a few stories to tell. There was everything from belly laughing to singing, and it goes without saying that these are officially two of my favorite people in Nashville. Here's our conversation.
Can you sing me a little more of that Tim McGraw song?
Language, straight from the heart. I didn't know you know this song. Pulls us all together, never apart. And once we learn to speak it, all the world will hear. I wish I knew the sound language. Love in any language.
You know what I've really just noticed is that you guys harmonized so well together just then, and you were so in sync. So it's very obvious to me you guys have known each other for a long time. So how did y'all meet?
I mean, it's been like
we're not
15,
really sure.
15 years now.
I think it has to be
or longer, actually.
When you were working with Wynonna, I would have been hovering around trying to get into the organization.
Well, we actually
in a as you do.
Way. Well, we had a restraining order at the office.
Oh, that's so you've come really far then from restraining order to friendship.
That was, because I was working for Wynonna in management right out of college. So that was my first job. And that's probably where we met because you were in radio at that point.
I was in radio about 2000. Were you there in 2005 or you'd already left?
I was then working for the governor.
Of
Tennessee?
Uh-huh.
Phil Bredesen.
Well, I was a spokesperson for the governor and other things.
Why don't we ever bring this up?
Well, because when I was Miss Tennessee, so it feels weird to talk about it from that perspective.
I think you should talk about being Miss Tennessee more. But no, I think you would have been. So I would, as soon as I got into country music in 2005, I was around Wynonna much as possible. So I think we figured it out that my first interview with Wynonna was at a blood drive.
Mm.
And I think you were there co-hosting the blood drive as Miss Tennessee.
That sounds right.
That's what we're going to go
with. That sounds right.
And you know
what's
funny is I have that photo. It popped up the other day of like, you know, in Facebook memories. And so it was me, Wynonna, her ex-husband, and our friend Rondell. And I was literally, I can't remember if she was wearing the crown or if I was wearing the crown. But yeah, we did co-host a blood drive while I was Miss Tennessee because I had to leave
That's got to be the same event because how many blood drives in Middle Tennessee does Wynonna Judd appear at?
I don't know, but that may have
been
our first
meeting. She's a giving woman, but that's
specific. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right.
Anyway, so yes, we've been here
for a very long time.
Yeah.
And as you both kind of mentioned, you have some extensive backgrounds in interviewing, but you were telling me you actually like to be interviewed, Hunter.
I really do like to be interviewed.
You do? Is it weird, though, when you're usually the one interviewing?
It's just exciting for me. I think mostly, mostly I just go to my therapist for this kind of talk.
Right.
You know what I mean? So at least once every 2 weeks, I'm interviewed for a full hour.
Okay. Actually, though, you're paying her. Yes. So.
I am. No, it's just really funny. I just like to be interviewed just because I don't do it very often.
Yeah.
But I always find I have a lot to say.
You do have a... Oh, Lord, you do have a lot to say all the time.
Well,
but it's a blessing.
We kind of touched on the fact that you have a pageant background, Ashley. So can you tell us more about that? Like, did that help you with your interviewing skills, would you say?
Well, so I went to college for music business, so I just thought I was going to be a manager or a publisher.
Right.
But I got into the pageant world in college on a bet from one of my sorority sisters. Because if you knew me in college, I was the girl that on a good day wore mascara.
Really?
But mostly sweatpants.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, I'm very much a tomboy. I grew up with all boys.
Yeah.
And so in college, you know, Miss MTSU, which is where I went to school, they have all the sororities put somebody up. And so my sorority sisters were like, you can sing, you can speak, you're doing it. And I was like, y'all are crazy. I also might have made fun of pageant girls at that point in my life. But also Miss Congeniality came out at the same time.
Okay.
And
I
love Sandra Bullock.
Same.
And I was like,
that movie's very foundational for you.
Well, and I really feel like so anyway, I ended up MTSU won Miss Congeniality, then eventually went on, competed Miss Tennessee, went to Miss America, and then that became my job, was being a spokesperson for the governor and traveling and speaking all over the state. So I literally went into this, and I joke, because I was like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality. I was like, what have I walked into?
And then before you knew it, you won.
Yeah.
That's like a crazy. Years.
But what I loved about it was that my job was to travel, did like 5 speaking engagements a day, different city every night for a year, speaking in schools and in different cities across the state and communities about respect and character education.
That was your platform?
No, that was part of the partnership with the governor's office and the Department of Education, was for me to travel and speak in schools about respect and character and that type of thing. And so, and then I would sing at all of them. So
what did you sing?
Oh,
it was a variety. Sometimes it was Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Sometimes,
do you want to give us a bar?
Was natural. I don't think I did Natural Woman, actually.
That's inappropriate.
Oh,
for
wow.
So yeah, so it was a wild ride. And then at the end of that, that's when ABC was doing the deal with the CMA to start the television program for the CMA Awards and CMA Fest. And I'd done enough TV at that point. It just sort of opened up. And they hired, I think the first year was Dean Sams from Lone Star and I co-hosting this digital series. And the next year was like me and Luke Bryan and Jake Owen. And
just went on from there.
Yeah, just went on from there. So I never thought this is what I would be doing.
No, but it seems like a natural transition. Like, as you said, the thing about making fun of the pageant girls, I went through that phase too. But now I know a lot of people who've done that in the past. And there's so much that you guys take away from that. And everyone is so well-spoken. And
well, I mean, I think about like, there's no, the training ground of speaking 5 speaking engagements a day, it's different city every night. Like,
right.
I couldn't have gotten that any other way. And I mean, I joke that I made fun of pageant girls. I really did. But then I met all of these incredible women, both
so
at like the local level, the state level, and then the national level. And like all the girls I competed with, like we keep up on Facebook, but there's like, we have a little private group and we'll all try and see each other every couple of years. And so it's great, because you didn't realize that you were actually making these relationships when you were competing against each other on a national level.
Well, and getting ready for Miss America is not an easy task.
No, it's no joke.
So
I don't really like tuna anymore.
You don't?
Is that all you ate? The tuna diet?
Raw tuna, chicken with nothing on it, egg whites, and vegetables.
Like Kenny Chesney's diet. So Ashley and I also, we volunteer even to this day, helping get ready Miss Tennessee for the interview process.
You do more than I do.
I love it.
You're like a mentor.
Well, no, I go in there and interview them.
Oh.
So Allison DeMarcus and her family run the Miss
Allison's
Tennessee,
married to Jay who's DeMarcus, a part of Rascal Flatts. Mm-hmm.
And so we go in and help her get ready with like current events or like their platform, and
that's
really
so smart.
Just flesh out what they're going to do. And it is intense. Like it's very, it's not, you know, they have celebrity judges. And
right.
You think it could be softball questions, but Miss Tennessee really goes through a lot to get prepared.
You really have to know who you are, I feel like, in these situations.
Yeah.
You have to have an opinion too and be able to back it up.
Right.
That's the thing that I even now see with artists, is that if you give me an answer in an interview that I can tell either someone's told you to say or has been fabricated, I'm like, I don't care.
Do you do much judging anymore?
No, I actually, hilariously say that, someone emailed me this week asking if I would judge Miss Nashville this weekend, and I can't.
I couldn't either. I judged it before, but it was good.
I was Miss Nashville. That's how
you were Miss Nashville. You know, Leanne Womack was as well.
She was.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys remember
as much about pageants?
Well, I was just about to say one more thing. Do you remember the girl that was like, "and such as," and so on, and such as? I still say that. It still comes in my brain.
Was she on Miss America?
I think it was Miss Universe.
Oh,
Universe is more about your looks, right?
So yeah, they're separate systems. So America has talent.
America has talent.
You have, like, I mean, that's how I paid for my master's, from the scholarship.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
But then USA is the feeder to Miss Universe. And
got
USA
it.
Is like, you gotta be hot and smart.
Yep. Hot.
And that's the one that Trump owned for years.
Correct.
And then eventually
he divested for the presidency just to keep those things separate. He's so good at that.
Or he just said some really inappropriate things, and I think the network was like, he and the network parted ways in the organization.
What? Okay, give us the little bit of juice, though. Is there anything about a pageant that you could tell us that's like, what's the worst part?
I mean, the worst part is walking in a swimsuit and high heels in front of people.
And the tuna diet,
the tuna diet was pretty terrible.
Are the girls catty at all?
I mean, some can be. There was one girl from Miss America that to this day, I'm just like, hun.
Not your face.
There was no need for that. She's just rude to everybody.
What's she doing now?
Did she win?
I can't say what she's doing now because then you would look her up and you'd be like, oh.
We know who she is.
She's saved. The Northeast. Okay. Anyway, Northeastern state. But,
well,
you know, for the most part, all the girls are pretty great. But what was your question? What did I
was just, I just wanted some tea on pageants. Yeah. Like, spill the juice.
Now, one of the things that I did do that we all did is that you would wrap, you would put, well, first of all, you always like shaded your abs and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, like to make it look like you had more abs.
There
contouring.
Also was stuff called, I called it pooping tea. That yeah, you like would drink this tea and it would make you like,
it's like,
it was a very strong diuretic.
Was it called Smooth Move? Have you ever had
that? No, but I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Where can I buy this?
That's from Whole Foods.
Well, I got mine in Jackson, Tennessee from a holistic
That sounds
guy,
sketchy. But, holistic in quotes.
In Jackson, Tennessee. Quote
unquote. But there, some of the crazier things, like you would put Preparation H all around your stomach and then wrap your stomach in cellophane and then sleep in it.
Because it tightens it, right?
Apparently.
Right.
For like 30 seconds.
Right.
I do not advise or promote any of these things.
These are just things that you did.
On Designing Women, Suzanne Sugarbecker said that she
I love
put,
a Designing Woman
she
reference.
She put Vaseline on her teeth to help her smile.
That does happen. I think I might have done that once. Okay. I did have a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh, yikes.
This is post-Janet or pre-Janet.
This would have been like 2002. That was pre-Janet.
Pre-Janet. Yeah. You're a pioneer.
well, let's just be real. My dress was too tight for my body.
Oh, yikes.
And
as did you think you were at Universe? Did you think you were at Universe?
She got confused momentarily.
Listen, so I was. This was actually Miss Nashville. And as I was about to walk out on the stage, the dress split all the way down the back.
Yikes.
For my performance.
That happened to me recently at Whiskey Row with a skirt, but that's another story.
Tell us about that, Kelly.
You know, that's another episode. We'll get to that at some other point.
Basically, we all had our own wardrobe.
Essentially, yes. So let's get back to interviewing because I think you guys are both great interviewers. What do you think the keys are to a good interview? I'm still learning. Listening. Okay. Tell me more.
Listening. Because I think too often, like I'll see in interviews, and I will do this sometimes where I'm thinking way too far ahead,
right,
and kind of jump ahead as opposed to listening to what they're saying and then trying to weave that into the conversation where we wanted to go. So I think that's the key, is listening to people as opposed to being so worried about your own agenda as the interviewer. Like some of the best moments in an interview happen because you didn't plan them.
Right. And if you stick so strictly to your outline, you might miss them.
Yeah.
Some of the best advice I ever got was reading Barbara Walters' memoir. She was talking about getting ready for interviewing Fidel Castro.
Wow.
And so basically, you know, they go over their notes. They have all these notes that are planned out and you kind of have the order and everything and you get it in your head. And then you're able to go in and kind of have it in your head and do the interview. It's like you're all like walking on air or something, you know, like, so you have the outline in your head of what you want to ask, but you're still present enough
to not be so focused. See, but I would be afraid I would forget.
Well, you might.
Like I have to have notes right in front of me, at least like as a guide
in front of us, but it's kind of, you can just, well, and that's another thing about having a co-host. That's wonderful.
Oh, totally. If you start to space out, they can pick up.
Well, and I think too, like one of the things that we've learned in doing a podcast, like anytime I used to go interview an artist, whether we would do it for like ABC or Rolling Stone or whatever it was, you know, you're not doing as many interviews probably in a week as I feel like in just long form. Like these, for a podcast interview, it goes so in depth that you need to be able to go with the flow of the conversation and go a little bit deeper without just having these five talking points. And so I think that's been the great thing for us, is like when I start to blank on where did we want to go or what do I want to ask next, or I'm trying to kind of pull together whatever he said and whoever we're interviewing said, like he can chime in. So that's kind of a nice thing of like, we've really had to learn kind of how to bounce off of each other. Because in the beginning, if you go back and listen to old episodes, there are times where we're talking on top of each other.
That's a tricky one with two people. Yeah.
Because we're both very animated and have a lot to say.
Or, so I produce our show. And so if something's going wrong, like it did yesterday in an interview we were doing technical, and on the technical side, Ashley can just carry it for a minute while I'm like over this. So that's wonderful. And so the Barbara Walters thing I was talking about, though, like getting ready, we get together and we, you know, we have a document on a Google Drive, and we basically, if we're not together in the same room, we'll just get on the phone and like kind of add to the same document. But really, I just let it kind of ferment in my head for a while. Like, what do I want to ask or what do I want to talk about? And then I'll just find it just like flows out. Like, this is okay. Right. And then you arrange them to make it make sense. Oprah also said,
tell me everything, Oprah.
I let the energy of the conversation, guide where we go. So it's kind of a hybrid of like preparation, but also listening.
Yeah. And I think that's been the thing too, is like what I've also learned in us working together on this is that I very much have my own process of how I get ready for an interview, and Hunter very much has his. And so he's so far ahead that he's always like, I've sent you a list of the questions that I want to ask. And I'm like, and I'll tell him, like, I'm not reading them until I go through and kind of figure out where I want this to go as well. And then we can kind of combine. And a lot of times we're on similar pages, but otherwise I would just read what he said. I'm like, oh yeah, we can do that.
Those are fine.
Or vice versa. And I'm like, that's not what we want to do.
No, because you want to have your two separate voices.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an experience where it was just terrible?
On the podcast or
just in general, have you had a terrible interview?
Oh yeah.
I mean, some people are really hard to talk to, right?
Well, some people it's like pulling teeth.
Like when they give the one word answers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing, you learn how to not ask yes or no questions.
Right.
That's the where you're going to go. Like, you can't ask yes or no questions.
Well, it's also something, so occasionally I'll media train artists, and it's something that I'll tell artists, like, if someone asks you a yes or no question, I need you to always add additional information. Like, you need to say, like, yeah, if someone says, like, how was your day? Like, it was great. I did X, Y, and Z. Like, you can guide the conversation and where you want it to go.
Right.
It's like mind games in an interview sometimes.
What do you mean?
Well, I think so often it's like people get into interviews and they think that the interviewer can drive the conversation. But really, as the subject, if you're a good interviewee and you know what you want to cover, you can drive where you want the conversation to go by the answers that you drop and the way that you do it.
Are you doing that right now?
Kind of. I could. But that's what I teach a lot of clients.
Yeah. Like,
they're masters. Reba and Dolly are Dolly's masters. A master. If you go, just watch Reba and Dolly. Trisha's great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What do they do? Give me examples.
Well, everybody's going to ask Dolly about everything under the sun. And so you can just like watch her do it artfully and she'll give you a little bit, but then she's able to bring it back to what she wants to talk about and her purpose for being there that day. And so that's a thing, like when you're interviewing somebody like that, like when I go in and it's like Reba or Dolly, you know, it's like you have your stuff together and you're ready, you know, because they're really very busy people, you know.
Well, yeah, you don't want to waste their time.
Yeah, and you can, so if they're looking at you and you're like blanking, it's really the most scary experience on the face of the earth.
Has that happened to you?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I would freak out. I'm nervous just hearing about it.
One time in 2006, I was still pretty new and I went to see Reba in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I had just come back from a wedding in Seattle. And as best man, I got a new leather satchel. Mm. And I was going to use it for all of my interview stuff. So I was so excited to go backstage at the Las Vegas Hilton, interview Reba with her key to the heart.
Oh,
with
right.
Your satchel.
With my new satchel. Like,
what's the difference between a satchel and a merce?
Well, it was a glorified merce.
Okay. I just need to get a mental picture. Mm-hmm.
So I go in there and I have this new recorder and I really don't know. I just started working with ABC Radio at the time and I did not pack extra like cards. So I did not know how to delete and make extra rooms. It was full.
Oh my God.
So Reba graciously gave me a phone interview later, but she was so great about it. But I'm just, it's like, oh my God.
You just don't want to mess up in a situation like that.
No. Like flying into a city and,
for an interview.
For an interview.
And then you don't have the space on a card.
Yeah, I didn't know. So
you live and you learn, unfortunately, in this business.
You do.
You really do. And no one knows everything. And if they act like they do, they're full of crap.
No. And it's honestly, like in my experience, it's been different with every single person. So you can't really, you definitely get the experience. But I was going to ask you guys who your favorite interview was, but I can't imagine if you've interviewed Dolly, I don't know who would be better.
I still haven't interviewed Dolly.
Never.
That is just goals right there.
I mean, I'm trying to think of like favorite interviews. I don't know. What do you feel like has been the most important thing that you've learned in doing this podcast and the interviews?
The listening thing that you said, that was told to me very early on by Bobby. He was just like, you can't go in with such an agenda that you miss what the conversation really is. And I think that's what you're like, what you're saying about Oprah. What I know from listening to her is she seems so engaged in the conversation and with the person. And that's why I'm so drawn to those interviews.
She's present. It's being present.
In exactly.
Instead of thinking about like, the other things you should be doing.
Like, she's definitely informed, but she's also engaged.
Great. We're informed. Yes.
Thank you.
That's a thing. Yes. I think what we deal with a lot, you know, especially like we get to know these artists in town when they're babies and they're open to everything.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes really weird, I would say, or harder when you have a relationship with them, but you see like they've gotten their first taste of like being in a tabloid and their guard goes up.
Yeah.
And it's such a different interview.
Really?
And in some ways it's really kind of heartbreaking because you know that like that trust or that easy conversation you had, like there's now a filter on it and they're not really as present. They're filtering what they're saying and they have to. And I've seen some artists that I've worked with over like the past 15 years, like they blow up. And then they get really defensive. And then eventually they're able to come through, like live some life and come back and be present again. And that's a great thing. But it's just really, it's an interesting thing, you know, to go with somebody from being just like a new artist trying to make it to like really, really famous really quickly. That's a mind.
I bet. You can cuss on here.
That's a mind F.
Well, and I think too, but watching that evolution for people, because, you know, so many artists are like blowing up in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they hit their mid to late 30s, it's kind of like we talk about, we've had a different, you know, you've lived some life at this point. You see them kind of come back to being really comfortable in their own skin and comfortable with what they're wanting to say. And if you don't like it, they're okay with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I like to tag off what you were saying. Yeah. Like I love seeing that in people, but I now, you know, that I'm in that age bracket of like mid 30s to late 30s, you're like, I see where it's because we've lived a lot of life that we're kind of coming back to like, okay, I'm comfortable with saying some things. And I would say that I wouldn't have said 5 years ago because I would have been so scared or whatever I was going to think.
I often say that when an artist is like at superstar level, like for the first 5 years, it's really to do an interview with them is not that interesting or engaging because it's harder to get anything off the cuff. Their guard is up. It's only like when they're new and then like afterwards when they like adjust and are able to like, you know, to it that you get interesting stuff. But a lot of times like interviewing the people who are like at the upper echelon, you know, it's kind of like, you're probably not going to tell me much because I'm not People Magazine.
Right. Know? And that's what you're saying when you can tell their people have told them what to say. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or that they've had, I mean, I saw that a lot in the pageant world. And so it's been interesting to see it in, you know, the music world, just when people feel, and a lot of that boils down to you're not comfortable in your own skin. Mm-hmm. And you're just trying to, or you have someone that's so controlling, like you just feel like you're doing a dance. Mm-hmm. And so, but that doesn't work. It doesn't connect with people.
No, because authenticity is what connects people. Mm-hmm. That's why Dolly's so great though, for real, because she can throw in those one-liners and makes you also think that you're getting to see this authentic side of her and she just owns who she is so much, you know? But like you said, she's actually very strategic.
Well, and there are other artists too who I love their music so much, but I don't necessarily think that All Our Favorite People is the right format for them because I think a big part of their appeal is that they are mysterious or that they don't say much or maybe they're not really good at talking.
Yeah.
Like some truth. Beyonce Give us the is truth. Not a great interview.
Well, I actually always say I never want to meet her in person.
Like Beyonce's not a great interview.
No, she's like shy, right?
She's a little shy and she just, you know, she, I mean, you watch interviews with her at the beginning and it's just.
I guess we're not going to have Beyonce on the All Our Favorite People podcast now.
That was never going to happen.
Oh, wow.
You know, if you put into World Hunter and you dream big enough, anything can happen.
Don't edit it out.
Beyonce.
Well, this is you guys are growing in public, just like we're talking about these artists. So
yeah. Oh my God, I totally messed up when I said Beyonce was a bad interview. But the thing is, she's just so much more effective when she doesn't like talk everywhere because then like the only information you're getting from her is her music and it's so she's able to communicate so much through her music.
I was just about
to
say that.
She's not able to communicate by going through and doing all these interviews.
Mm-hmm. That is how she communicates though. We know about the whole Jay-Z cheating thing. through her music. Mm-hmm. We would never know that in an interview with Beyonce.
It was fascinating because really for most of the mid part of this decade, she didn't use words.
No, she
It was
stopped,
like that Bjork
right?
song, Madonna song, Bedtime Stories that Bjork wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Today is the last day that I'm using words. They've gone out, lost their meaning. You know, it's like Beyonce.
Could you imagine? You just stop using words.
Yeah, stop using words. Beyonce on Instagram, it was just photos. It was just fashion photos.
There no captions.
Words. I remember when she started using words again, and it was a big time.
Was it
like,
a big deal on your text chain with
Joseph
Connor?
Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. It's like Beyonce's using words again.
Well, you know, you're actually really leading me to the next topic I wanted to talk about with you, which is your love of pop culture. Actually, love. Your wealth of knowledge about pop culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that we're on a text chain, you and Courtney and all of us, and we talk about things. I mean, there's things that you text us that I get a text from you with an update of something that's happening, and then I get a BuzzFeed notification of it. But you're before. You
really?
You bring it to me before sometimes.
Well, so that
breaking
was
news.
Well, that was my job.
Breaking news.
Yes. So at ABC Radio, I was in, like, tied into ABC News.
Okay.
For breaking news.
Oh, well.
So that's what my mm-hmm. whole world was. So for 10 years, I was plugged into not just with country music, but everything going on with every story ABC News was covering was in my email.
Mm.
And so that is a
that gives me anxiety.
I did not realize what level of anxiety I was living with for that 10 years.
Yeah.
But it also taught me, you know, just to move like quickly with stories. So I would, you know, be getting the stories and moving on them very quickly. Yeah.
So it's just built into you now.
It's built into me, but I think I've always been fascinated by pop culture. Like when I was in third grade, mm-hmm. my favorite teacher ever, Miss Tompkins, had Us Magazine and People Magazine, and I would get done with my work quicker than the other kids. So she'd let me read them, and
oh,
we
wow.
would like talk about pop culture all the time. And Mom still tells this story. Did we tell this that like one day she knew I was sick? Miss Tompkins knew I was sick because Elizabeth Taylor's boyfriend, Malcolm Forbes, had died, and I didn't say anything about it. And I really was sick. Like, I just didn't feel well. But she knew because I had not told her about Elizabeth Taylor's boyfriend that day.
It just threw her off.
Why
yeah.
is none of this surprising?
It's not at all.
At yeah. all. But, to your point, Kelly, like, it really is. There's stuff that Hunter pulls out just in normal conversation that I'm like, should I know this?
No,
like,
probably not.
From like 1995 or from yesterday.
The bank of information yes. living in your brain is, it's just so extensive. It's very impressive.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're a genius.
Really?
On pop culture?
And
absolutely.
Pop culture, like,
well, I just.
How they don't have you on more television shows as like an expert.
I don't know.
We're going
to
work on
well,
that.
Well, we need to really pitch that. Here's the pitch right here.
We're
you
putting
know?
This into the world.
I love doing that kind of thing. I think it's
put
just.
Put it on a vision board.
I think it's just really, you know, as a child, I just was always inside. Like, I wanted to watch television. It was like, or whatever, music. Like, that was what was fascinating to me. I never wanted to go outside and play, really.
Yeah, interesting.
I was just always sucked into. So I think I've learned to balance it a little better. Mm-hmm. I mean, and in this day and age, there's no way to be up on everything. No.
You can't keep up, but so, you do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Speaking of these topics, though, what are things on your radar right now?
So basically, when I need to unwind at night
okay.
and just like not read the real news, mm. A friend of mine turned me on to the Daily Mail app.
I love the Daily Mail.
And it is just so good because it's a bunch of pictures, but it's not, it's just, you know, kind of straight news, but I can't believe some of the stuff that they post. So this is coming out. Like Bob Barker, 95, in a wheelchair in Beverly Hills this week.
Bob Barker's still alive?
Bob Barker's
from The Price
still
is
alive
right?
from The Price is Right.
Wow.
And then Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm obsessed with her new husband, Brad Falchuk,
yeah.
the producer.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they weren't living together.
I heard about
yeah.
this.
And so they're finally living together. And Jimmy Kimmel got it out of her that she let him bring some chairs into the house.
Well, okay. Can we dive into this topic a little bit? Because Gwyneth is known for the conscious uncoupling
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
So she's very progressive in these relationship issues.
Well, so I guess in her conscious coupling
uh-huh.
with
right,
Brad
right,
Falchuk,
right. So
it
now
was
she's
like,
coupling.
Okay, these are the chairs you can bring into the home.
I mean, so what they were married for a year? Is that the deal before
she
he moved
said
in?
That they both had
what was the arrangement?
Kids and uh-huh. so they were trying to bring them together.
I mean, I do understand the melding,
especially
of
when
two
you
families.
Have multi-million dollar home in the Hamptons.
Oh, is that where they moved?
Well, they both, I think they probably both had houses.
Did they?
Right. Who gives up their house?
Like down the street from each other.
And I know that her, I know that Gwyneth's place in New York is like sick because we have a friend who like goes and stays there sometimes.
Oh. Well, but that's kind of my question is why it's not like they don't have the space. Mm-hmm. So
it's a whole different world when you're talking about like mm-hmm. the people with multiple homes and it's, like,
that's true.
It's like, what does really moving into your house, moving in together mean when you have seven homes around the world?
Right.
You know?
But did they stay together? I think I read somewhere that it was like they stayed together like two or three times a week.
I can't speak to that.
Okay.
Which, that's my favorite phrase. I can't speak to that.
Well,
and you do that when do you say that?
I say I can't speak to that. Well, in this case, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it also leads you to believe that maybe I know something.
But I just can't.
I just can't say it.
Oh.
I can't speak to that.
Okay. I mean, he's grinning while he's saying.
Feel free to use it. You know what I used to wonder, though? So I used to wonder.
Your mother-in-law asked you a question you don't want to answer. I can't speak to that.
You know what I used to wonder,
definitely
though?
Definitely using like, it, actually.
So back when we, so now like I have YouTube TV, so it goes everywhere. It's uh-huh. just in the cloud. But back when we had DVRs and we relied on DVRs.
I still have a DVR.
I still have a DVR. I was watching it last night with my Taco Bell at midnight.
Taco Bell? Wild night?
Well, I had been at a dinner and then I drank some wine. And then on the way home, I was like, I should probably eat something. And on the way home, the only thing there was Taco Bell. I was like, well.
What did you order?
I guess I'll go on a detox next week.
Girl, this detox has been held off.
Okay, I need you to not. I need
calling
you to
him
back
out.
I did three hard shell tacos.
Yum, delicious.
Oh, Pepsi!
Wow.
Well, I'm
really
I
partying.
I preference Coca-Cola, but
if it's not available,
unless there's a sponsorship on here, and then you need to. Okay,
you can feel free.
But that's, you know, the partnership with Pepsi is Taco Bell. So
okay,
it was my option.
It's there all Yum brands.
It is all Yum brands.
From Louisville, Kentucky, your hometown.
My hometown. You're right. Anyway.
So we were talking about can't speak to that with our little Taco Bell tangent, but you can't speak to, what were we saying?
Well, we're talking about that. No, multiple homes. I used to wonder, and I would ask my friends who had access to people who had multiple homes,
uh-huh.
what do you do with your DVR and season pass? Like, is it up to each house manager to make sure that your shows
are set up?
It
seems like you could have one account for all your homes.
No, not if you're in different countries. You'd have different cable systems.
You know, lucky for us, we don't have that problem.
I know.
I was just really worried.
I just have the one
that
home.
The mega rich were not seeing Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, man.
I was really worried.
I understand. It's keeping you up at night.
They can watch it wherever in the cloud.
Thank you. Thank goodness they solved that problem for us.
For real.
Got from the internet.
So I was looking, though. I kind of tend to, I think with pop culture, it's really like, I don't know, sometimes I'm into like people who are famous for no reason.
Like, really, ooh, do you mean like reality stars?
Yeah.
Shots fired.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
Okay.
You're valid.
You're our
Thanks,
favorite
guys.
Reality star.
Thanks, guys.
I don't consider you that way. You like actually like.
Well, because I'm not famous.
I didn't say that. You're famous. People love you on planes.
That is true. Thank you.
But just.
He can't dig himself out of this one.
I apologize. I don't consider.
Do
you
really
that.
Think I care? I'm just fucking with you.
People
who are famous for no reason, like who? Give me some examples.
Well, there was this person.
Such as?
I used to read delisted.com a lot.
Oh, I've heard about this site.
And I kind of came back to it recently, but it used to be my Bible. And there was this woman that was around LA that was, and this was before Instagram. So that's kind of what I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have an Instagram following with like a book, like, then you like are actually doing something to. I consider Instagram television now.
It's so true.
Like,
and
so
Instagram
following an audience on Instagram, you're doing something to engage your audience.
Right.
There's something happening.
Right.
But there's this woman, I forget her name, but he would call her chicken cutlets just because her implants on her cheeks look like chicken cutlets.
Her cheek implants did.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Looked like she had like two chicken cutlets up in there.
Oh, that's some Southern shit
so
right
forget, there. I forget her name, but she was in LA and she would just show up and she kind of looked like Lana Del Rey with like lighter red hair.
Okay.
But she would just show up and for no reason. And he would just follow her everywhere she went. And like she would show up at all these parties.
Who's this guy? I'm confused.
Delisted.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, delisted.com.
Okay.
So he's Michael K.
Okay.
Delisted.com. Okay. So when Jessica Simpson came to do her country album about 10 years ago.
I remember.
The only thing I wanted to talk to Jessica Simpson about was chicken cutlets. I was like, do you know this woman?
Did she?
No, she'd never heard of her.
She's like, what is this guy talking about?
Jessica, great. You like have a career and you're legit famous and make like $300 million a year on your fashion line. But do you know this woman who goes to all these parties in LA named Chicken Cutlet? Well, no, I forget her name. I hate that.
I wish that you could remember. I don't know, girl with, what do you say? Chicken cutlet face implants? Oh my God. We also mentioned, this is a little bit of a side tangent, but last night when I was texting with you, you brought up your current obsession with the Aaron Carter situation.
It's really like, it kind of reminds me of watching Britney in the mid-2000s because Britney, while her Instagram account is concerning right now.
It is a little concerning.
I think, you know, she's probably getting the help she needs. Aaron Carter, I mean, it's just kind of nuts. I didn't really know much about the Carter family until I watched the 2020 on them. Mm-hmm. And that's really got me interested just because of all the kind of dysfunction that goes on
it's a
in the
lot.
Carter family. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they're, I mean, the stuff that's come out about Aaron, like restraining orders from the brothers that he's like threatened to kill their baby.
Pregnant. No, their pregnant wife, isn't it?
And then he was taking a drug test on television. I'd seen him on The Doctors when he was kind of having his meltdowns and stuff. And for some reason, I just started following him on Instagram. And I'm really concerned for him.
This is me projecting because I can't remember if it was him. Was he one of the guys that was accused of assault?
That was Nick. I think that was Nick, the Backstreet Boy. That's what Aaron is saying. He's like, I'm not the only crazy.
Like, he's airing laundry about them saying that Nick assaulted somebody.
He's actually trying to team up with the girls on Twitter. And
well, and the other day he was like, he was tagging the FBI in his post.
Oh God, dear God. Oh dear God.
Dude,
sweet
like,
boy.
Don't contact the FBI. Well, maybe you do in this day and age. Contact the FBI on social
media.
Via
Twitter?
Why not?
I mean, you could probably contact the president, so might as well.
He doesn't reply. I've tried. Oh.
He hasn't blocked you yet?
I blocked him. Oh. For my own mental health.
This is an interesting thing with the child stars, though, because you mentioned Britney. I mean, I'm a little worried about Britney these days, too. I have a special place in my heart for her. Do you guys know about this JoJo Siwa?
Wasn't there just a concert?
There was.
Disney star?
She's the big rage right now with all the kids.
Yeah.
She's like 16, though, and I'm like, she's going to be a monster, and I'm just waiting for her to shave her head and have her Britney moment. I don't know how they don't, though. But if you're selling out arenas at the age of 16,
you have no capacity to deal with
real life. There is no way.
I can't imagine.
I mean, wow. Well,
in Lawrendale, Alabama, you didn't have that for you?
I mean, I was a local celebrity.
Right. How have you adjusted?
Hard. It was very hard.
Yeah, the transition, I'm sure.
Did we not send you his rider before we came in here?
I'm so sorry that I did not have
She had coffee with almond milk and she had sparkling water. I mean,
I didn't have your red M&Ms for you. Are those specific?
You didn't have his turkey wrap provided. I'm
so sorry. It really failed
luckily
you.
I'd be wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, so obviously you guys have a lot of interviewing situations happening, but you've also got these side projects that I'm so obsessed with. First of all, I was watching Dollar Club this morning, Ashley. I've seen a lot of these, and they always make me cry.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody what that is that you do?
So the Dollar Club, it's my volunteer gig.
Yeah.
It started about 5 years ago, and the church that I go to in town called Cross Point, which is one of the massive churches in town, they had this idea that if you could have everybody pull together just like a dollar, put in a dollar, pull that money together, find a need in the community that needs to be filled and go fill it. Because so many people feel like, especially in this town where it's like there's so many creatives, so many college students, they want to be able to give back, but they feel like if they can't give a lot, then it's not going to make a difference. And so they had this idea like, okay, well, everyone can do a dollar.
Yeah.
So pull that money together. So they did, but the added caveat is they send me and our video team into whoever the beneficiary is that month. And it ends up being anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000 every month. This month that we actually just filmed this week is going to be, I think I can say this, but it's going to be like $15,000.
I saw one today where it was like 125.
That was when we went to India.
Yeah. I sobbed.
Like a year ago. I mean,
insane.
So basically we go in and I just get the story and they have no idea what we're doing.
Right.
We just tell them like, we're going to share their story. And then, you know, there's always some hardship and it could be a family, an individual. It could be, we've done some around the floods in Baton Rouge. We went to Vegas for one. Obviously just went to India a year ago and helped build a boys' home over there to help get boys out of the slums and off the streets.
Well, when you say boys' home, though, I mean, the video kind of does it justice, I feel like, because you can see the slums that they're living in. You see even the building that they're building is like right by this train track. I mean, it's not this glamorous life, but survival almost.
Right. And otherwise, I mean, the hope, there's, you know, there's not a lot of hope in the slums for a better life. And obviously drug use is rampant. And so anyway, so we started that like 5 years ago and do it once a month. And it has been the greatest gift in my life to get to be a part of.
That's really what your heart wants to do though, right? You said that in our text earlier too. You said, my heart really is really toward telling great stories that encourage and empower others all over the world.
Yeah. And this is something where it's where I realized the power of a story. Because at that point, the only interviews I'd ever done were really with artists talking about records. And there was just sort of something in my gut that was like, I think I've been given these gifts to be able to do this and tell stories in this way. But I want to be able to do it in a way that is, you know, like you said, encouraging, empowering other people. But I'd never told a serious story before until I sat down to do a dollar club and was terrified. And then it's just sort of evolved into this thing where of everything I do, I get stopped about that more than anything else. And you just see where the power of our stories, how we see ourselves in them. But then when a community comes together to help other people, the massive difference it can make. So it's just every time we film one, the team and I always just step back and are like, why do we get to be
totally
a part of this? And
well, one, it gives you perspective of your life and how lucky all of us are.
Yeah.
But when you see the faces of those people, when you guys tell them you have the money to help them, I mean, that's obviously when the tears start flowing. Oh. But
I mean, I can't.
Right.
I used to be able to control it. And I think I was just in some sort of zone. Like, you know, back in the day, I felt like, oh, I need to be like the perfect interview and da 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 da. And then when you really let yourself be present in the moment, it's just that's where the beauty happens.
Yeah.
And so I basically crying, everyone.
Just let it down, girl.
I know, girl.
You got to.
Yeah, and I see you bringing that into All Our Favorite People as well.
Mm-hmm. How does she do that? Talk about it.
Well, so when we started All Our Favorite People, Ashley and I had wanted to work together for a long time, and it finally worked for us just to, we were having coffee, and we were both, for the first time in a long time, not working for tied to a major media company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we got together and just kind of tried talking to each other for All Our Favorite People just to see what it'd be like, our energy back and forth.
Well,
and
Hunter literally was like, why don't you come over and let's just try this. And see, I get over to his house and we sit down at his kitchen table and he's got a recorder going.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're okay.
Here we go.
Let's do it. And so, but you know, we're very intentional on the show about shining a light on mm-hmm. people that we think you're going to get something out of knowing what they're doing, or, you know, what they're making, or just that they're great or funny people. Mm-hmm. And like, so Ashley and I, like, you've really, that's a thing. Like, we really want these people on the show to like encourage and also, I think
it's drawing out the heart of who people are. And I've just learned so much in the last couple of years after going through a lot of turmoil in the last 10 years and really in the last couple, like therapy, which I always talk about because I love it.
Same.
And it's the best and hardest thing I've done, digging into your crap, but it can be so freeing. And I think I learn so much when people are actually vulnerable mm-hmm. and real about the stuff. And that's what, you know, we all go through things mm-hmm. and we can learn something from each other. So, and then how can we just be better to each other? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, even like, you know, you coming on the podcast or anybody that we've had on, it's trying to get to the heart of who they are and what really matters to them, but doing it in a way that it kind of connects all of us on a really human level.
I think the connecting piece that I think that's so true, because the connecting piece that I always feel with people is when I hear them be vulnerable, and honest, especially these artists or these people who seemingly have everything together on the outside. And then you go, oh, wait a second. They're not so different than me. Like,
I think that in the last couple of years, and we've talked about this, like I struggle so much with like the Instagram perfect life and comparison and like, how am I supposed to function with this? And I feel like I'm supposed to be perfect on it. I'm like, this is BS. Like,
yeah.
I would rather have these really real conversations and us like, you know, and figuring out how you want to function within that to where, you know, how do I want to say this? Everybody's having, like, people are having a hard time. So it's like, how can we really, like we said, encourage and empower each other, but also like have fun. Like that's been the fun thing for us is, yes, we'll get to the heart of stuff on the podcast, but we also, I mean, we laugh a lot and have this great, I mean, it's great.
Right.
There's a lot of hilarity.
Well, that's a good balance. I think that you guys both bring where maybe you can pull some of the heartstrings out and Hunter's got a lot of the humor coming at you.
Yeah.
It just happens.
The balance of you guys together too.
You just never really know. But like, that's the thing that we laugh about because people are like, are you trying to make me cry? I'm like, no, I'm just like asking the questions that
you're just asking the real questions. Yeah. Well, in y'all's description, you even say these are our favorite people that we've connected with in some way, shape or form. And this is about the messiness of life, which that's how life is, right? It's just everybody's kind of messy.
Yeah, for the most part, we have to like meet the people before they come on the show.
I didn't meet you before, did I?
No. Well, she had.
Well, I was like, we're gonna have Kelly.
Yeah,
she'll be awesome.
Sometimes it's like, getting to know them on the air, and that's a wonderful situation. That's happened a few times for me that I've like come away. Meeting people, but for the most part, it's kind of like, okay, we kind of have a rule, like we'd like to meet you before.
We want to know them before.
Yeah. And because it allows for a different conversation.
Yeah.
When the people are really familiar, at least to one of us.
At least,
we try to make it that both makes of sense. Us for the most part. Yeah. But
like for you, it was Ashley, you and Ashley knew each other very well.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to bring in kind of a getting to know you element as well, which I think also for the listener, they're getting to know you. Or so for like when we had Beth Grant on, the character actress who's been in like all these Oscar winning movies. Like,
which you knew her well.
I knew her.
And you,
so that's a good. And you're like, oh my gosh, you're in everything.
Oh my God, I love her. And she's friends with Sandy Bullock. And I'm like,
oh my God,
your
girl, Miss Congeniality.
And Octavia Spencer. I'm like, when can I meet Octavia?
She's the best too. Well, and I also feel like, Hunter, I feel like I knew you the second I met you. We just connected on a soul level.
Y'all really did.
Well, I knew from listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast, I was like, oh yeah, like just, you know, I already bought a book that you'd recommended by the time we met.
It was on your desk when I walked in.
Yeah. I'm just so thankful I could bring this new friendship together. Because I will say, our group text with Courtney, I got out of something yesterday. And it had been maybe an hour and a half. And there were like 28 text messages. And most of them were the two of you. And I was...
Well, Courtney's rolling. British, so...
Courtney is our friend who's in publicity here in Nashville.
She's British, so I was down a Kylie Minogue video rabbit hole. And then I went into Robbie Williams. And I'm fascinated by how big artists are overseas or in different parts of the country. And not necessarily
we cannot even
here.
Know about them over here. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a fan of Robbie Williams, who's huge, massive over there. And he
honestly really, have no clue who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. He kind of had a brush with fame in America.
What?
In
give me
2000s.
A song.
I'm loving angels instead.
Oh, I know that.
It's Jessica Simpson covered to bring it back to Jay Simp.
Jay Simp.
So I just needed to talk to her about that. And it's just fascinating to me.
I'm like, so glad you included us on that conversation.
Yeah, right.
The more you know. Mm-hmm. You know what else I'm fascinated by? Like an artist who has a separate career outside of America.
Who?
Celine Dion's French career.
Really?
Well, yeah.
I don't know. But she's also huge in America.
Massive. But she has a completely different catalog of French hits.
What?
In other parts of the world.
She's Canadian.
Oh, that's
French
right.
Canadian. She's French Canadian.
Do you guys remember her rap song, Treat Her Like a Lady?
Treat her like a lady.
That's the one.
That's the one. That's what you wanted.
All you men. And she's like, and that's
lady.
Something.
Treat her like a lady.
Now listen, have any of your other guests just broken into song?
No, but
you'll
it's...
You'll make a good girl crazy if you don't treat her like a lady.
Okay, I have to talk about, since we're singing, let's talk about the Judds for a second. Because
praise
Hunter,
Jesus.
I mean... First of all, I did not know you both were connected to the Judds, which just was mind-blowing to me. Mm-hmm. But Hunter is currently doing this this project called Neon Songbooks, which I got super sucked into this morning as well. I can't wait to finish. I need to finish episode one so I can get on to episode two. What made you tell us first of all about the project?
Well, Neon Songbooks started around the same time as All Our Favorite People.
Okay.
So
which was what, about a year ago?
A year and a half ago.
Okay. 2018.
Okay.
So I was working at Cox Media Group, and mm-hmm. the company folded. The part just folded. So, you know, lost
rare
my job.
Country.
Rare country.
Right.
Lost my job, but got a good severance and kind of was like, for the first time in 15 years, able to figure out like, okay, what do I want to do, you know, and kind of move freely. And it was really what a dream project for me was. I always wanted to talk. I always took every opportunity to talk to Wynonna and Naomi Judd. And their story for me was so ingrained in my love of music because mm-hmm. when I was 3 years old, I was like drawn to their harmonies. And then growing up, just loved their music. It was like that acoustic thing. It was tied in with the mountain kind of music. And grew to just love them so passionately to the point that when I was 14, I was the section leader of the Wynonna fan club on CompuServe.
Wow. CompuServe.
Which was AOL and CompuServe.
I've never
90s.
Even heard of CompuServe.
So CompuServe.
It was like around the AOL.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was like before AOL just took
we were
over.
Like middle school, high school.
It was okay. middle school, high school.
Okay.
I was 14
okay.
years old.
Wow.
Hosting Wynonna fan chats,
oh.
doing Wynonna giveaways,
oh.
writing about Wynonna, writing posts about Wynonna. Like seriously what I did at ABC News, I was doing it 14 for Wynonna online.
Wow.
And so her album, Tell Me Why, came out in 93 when I was 12, and it really just opened me up to everything as far as like Bonnie Raitt, Emmylou Harris, Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor, like all these people who made these singer-songwriter records. And so that album is still, to this day, my favorite album ever. But with the Judds, they are larger than life. They're
yeah.
on Oprah. They were on Oprah all the time. They have their own Oprah show. And there's always, they're so honest about what's going on with their life and their drama and troubles. And that really endears them. But what gets lost in that is just how brilliant the music
mm-hmm.
is.
Brilliant.
And so I decided that I, for myself, but also to kind of get it back out there, why the Judds deserve to be like
in the Hall of Fame.
In the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Are they not?
They're not.
What?
They're not. And they're starting to get passed over. Like people who came out after them are starting
yeah.
to get ahead of them. And I just don't think that the powers that be, I think the drama or their personalities kind of overshadow what they did, which was really they're in their They predate Randy Travis. You know, they're in there with Reba and Ricky Skaggs as getting country music back to the roots and the heart mm-hmm. of what it was in the 80s. But, 14 number one hits in 6 years.
How do you pass over that?
Well, it's just gotten lost. So I went and got it together to interview Wynonna and Naomi in depth, plus their producers, Brent Mayer and bandleader Don Potter. And also a lot of their contemporaries. So Reba, Trisha
Yearwood, Ricky Skaggs,
Emmylou Harris, and then the people they've influenced, Trish, I think I mentioned Trisha, mm-hmm. Kix Brooks,
mm-hmm.
Shane McAnally, and Brandi Clark, to talk about the story of the music of the Judds. So it starts with when they discovered music and started singing together and how they formed this music out of their, because they loved everything. They loved like big band music. They loved bluegrass music. They loved country music. So they were soaking it all in. And then they were able to, with Brent and Don, form this sound that just still to this day sounds so fresh
mm-hmm.
and just the thought that went into it. And so it really is, it's only covering up until the Judds, the duo breaks up. I was very intentional about just wanting to focus on that because Wynonna's story is still ongoing. But the thing is, Wynonna Judd's voice blows
so
me away. And so to see her evolution, I mean, she started straight out of the gate at 18, just sounding like a million bucks, singing on number mm-hmm. one country hits. But then you see her coming into her own, and Naomi is a songwriter, and just, it's just such a brilliant story that's not really told. The problem is...
Well, also think about the tenacity
yeah.
of them. I mean, like...
Well, coming from nothing.
Coming from nothing, like the story of, you know, Naomi in the hospital and being a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And But I've loved watching him develop this project because, one, having worked for Wynonna for several years.
Which I did not know, by the way. That's crazy. That's awesome.
But, you know, she's one of the reasons that I'm in this business right now, because growing up, I just loved the Judds music and that, you know, and we just loved singing it. It's like her and Trisha and Shania. And so it's been fun, like, to watch Hunter dive back into all of this because I'm learning so much.
Right.
I mean, I learned so much putting this together, but it's intense. Like, these episodes are like an hour long. It's probably going to be about 7 episodes.
Oh, wow.
And it really is a really intense project, but I've loved it because it's really like putting together a book. Like, and I think it probably could be a book at some point. Mm-hmm. The problem that we've run into is really licensing songs. Like it.
Oh, you know, yeah.
So we've been talking to everybody as far as like partners in the podcast world and everything, and it's just the amount of songs that we want to license for this is cost prohibitive. So I'm figuring out, or if anybody has 50 grand,
we need an investor.
But
you need a Kickstarter.
You just need like a big investor.
Yeah, I need to figure it out because it really is so special, and it's also, they deserve this, and all, yeah. You know, and I think that when it comes to like whatever, Wynonna is now moving into Americana, that whole world a little more, and she rightfully should be there. Like
right.
All the kingpins of Americana love the Judds music. So yeah, I think it's really just, they are so important to me. They're so foundational for me that I want them to have their place, their proper place, and be respected for the music that they brought to the table and how they changed the game in country music. I will say, I give the Kim Burns documentary that just happened, country music, did give the Judds their due. And I was really glad to see that.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm dying to see it.
So they go through and they get as much time as Reba, Ricky Skaggs, you know. And so their place in there, I hope that will help establish. But it's really, so the idea for it, Neon Songbook, at first it's just started out as the Judds, because I love them and I want them to go in the Country Music Hall of Fame. But then I realized there's all these other artists who have now 15-year careers. We need to start shaping your narrative, mm-hmm. why you matter. Like, mm-hmm. I look at somebody like Carrie Underwood, who we just saw the other night. And I remember when she first got to town, you know, just from American Idol. And the career that she's built, I mean, if you just said, hey, this girl won American Idol, she's got a great voice. And the career that she's built as far as being like, selling out these arenas, putting together these shows that rival Reba's back in the 90s.
She
like,
needs to be Entertainer of the Year this year at the CMAs. We'll drop that right now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But calling it right now.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you
I'm saying she needs to be.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see her win.
I would love to see her win.
Because that show is insane.
Yeah. Well,
because a lot of times with Entertainer of the Year, you'll see like they deserve it for this year because they've gone over the top.
Right.
But like, the body of work as well.
Yeah.
And Carrie has done that over and over again. So I think like Carrie is a prime candidate to, at some point, to do something like a Neon Songbook, because you as the artist who have this long career want to have first crack at how you're remembered.
Right.
You know,
I also just see, I mean, like we were talking about when we started this, like you're such a wealth of knowledge and mm-hmm. stuff that the rest is like, I just don't remember or think about.
No.
And I really feel like in looking at the next generation of, I feel like you'll be the next generation of a historian of country music.
Which, I mean, I've always said I want my Walmart greeter job to be at the Hall of Fame. Like, I want to just like, I want, you know.
You should.
Like when people who are like old as hell,
yeah,
you know, like where they work, I want to be up in there. Just
you
like,
absolutely should be the face of the Hall of Fame.
Well, but your heart for it, your passion for it, your wealth of knowledge, mm-hmm. and the way I think too, just watching you from the outside, the way you've poured into this project,
yeah.
And I have no doubt that it's going to see the light of day in a massive way at some point.
It's just got to find the right
home. It's just got to find the right home. And the timing's mm-hmm. got
to
be right.
Well, I have to say, when I was driving over here today, I was listening to episode 1 and I didn't want to get out of my car. First of all, like your questions are amazing and you're right. Like it's definitely geared towards the music, which is what I want to know from mm-hmm. an artist, you know, that we don't always get to hear the backstories, but they are such an interesting duo to just mm-hmm. listen to speaking, like the way that they talk and just the stories they tell.
Well, and especially with them, because it is so, the music is so tied up with their relationship.
Right.
And if you're going to talk to the Judds, getting them to talk about the drama that goes on between them is so much more compelling in a bite-sized format mm-hmm. than like, here's how we, our musical evolution.
Right.
But the musical evolution that they went through and caused in country music needs attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also need to talk about, you know, my love for the Judds, which...
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so...
As... The joy this video brought to my life.
The video you're speaking of is what was... I put this on my Instagram from Seven Peaks this year, which is the music festival that Dierks Bentley does. Dierks' manager, who is also one of my very good friends, Mary Hilliard Harrington.
We love her.
Yes. A pistol.
A pistol, if you will. We dressed up as the Judds for 90s Country Night and also made a video for Love Can Build a Bridge.
I went all out.
I was just like, I texted, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And it's bringing so much joy into my life.
Thank you. Well, so I sent this to Hunter this past week and he sent it to Wynonna. Yeah. I'm still dead over that. I can't even process her.
Her only note was, let's upgrade the hair. Y'all went to Kim's Hair World.
She wanted to do our hair for us or get us better wigs.
Yeah, you need, I mean, if you're going to do it, I went as Wynonna a few years ago for Halloween.
Oh, did you? I need to see pictures of that.
We had
okay.
Diva Halloween. Uh-huh. So, of course, I went as Wynonna from the Tell Me Why album cover. So The pirate shirt, mm-hmm. puffy shirt mm-hmm. with the black vest and the red.
Oh, I remember wig. This look. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
My mama used to say that look on Wynonna was like a Wicked City woman. Wynonna was a little concerned about...
Our hair.
Well, no, she said to me, like, I love you, Hunter, and you look great. Don't ever do it again.
Oh, your outfit.
For me.
That's why I can't believe you sent her our video.
Why wouldn't I?
I mean, was she flattered or was she annoyed?
She liked
Tell
it.
Me
she
the
just,
truth.
I think she want, I mean,
she
the
was
hair
annoyed
is
with
very
her
important.
Hair. Okay.
Because Wynonna loves the music, but also her hair.
I mean their it's hair and makeup, if you go back and look, it's intense.
They did all their own hair and makeup at that point,
really?
Didn't they?
No, they had Earl Friend, I think Earl Cox. And
oh,
they had, right. They had makeup artists, especially for anything you see like album cover, videos, award shows. Now, Wynonna had to do Naomi's hair before the show.
Okay.
I felt like I just remembered a story where they did all of their own, but I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Well, that's probably why she's like, I should do these girls trying to be me, not looking right. If you want to see that video, it's on my Instagram under my Seven Peaks post and also in Wynonna's text thread with Hunter, which is, I don't even know what to think.
I mean, if you're going to send out like video Christmas cards, I feel like that should be included.
Oh, I didn't think about that, but that's actually a great idea. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
It's a gem. I mean, I could barely look up because I was laughing so hard at Mary Hilliard owning that Wynonna character.
Mary Hilliard, it came from such a place of love and respect for the Judds.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. She was like, we're going to do this justice.
Well, and that's, I mean, and I hear them all the time, like on SiriusXM, on like Prime Country and the Garth channel, like the Judds are a major part of it. And I just think they need their due. They need to go in the Country Music Hall of Fame.
I agree. Let's start the petition.
That's what I'm trying to do.
He's working on it.
Where can people find you guys' podcast? Because we mentioned it a little bit, the All Our Favorite People podcast, which I've been on. It is so much fun. I listened to the one with Jay DeMarcus last night. I love him.
Oh,
he's
what
so
a sweetheart.
Funny. He's so funny, but like what was so great about that podcast is sort of what we were talking about, where he really kind of dove into the messiness of life and that it's not perfect. And he's hit a lot of landmines. I was about to say land blocks, roadblocks and landmines mm-hmm. combined. Mm-hmm. And that's always interesting to hear about because they've also reached such great success with Rascal Flatts.
Yeah.
But I love hearing about the backstory of this wasn't as easy as it just looked to you guys, you know?
Yep.
It's a great podcast.
Well, thanks.
Who else can we look forward to hearing from on y'all's podcast?
We just had Trisha Yearwood, Beth Grant.
Ooh.
By the time this airs, the Kelsey Ballerini and Jason Owen episode
amazing.
Will be up that we recorded yesterday. Who else have we had on that? Sounds like a bunch of women. Cody Allen was just on.
We had Vince Gill on.
Oh, I love Vince
great.
Gill.
We were able to talk to him quite a bit about the Kim Burns Country Music documentary as well. And that was a great conversation.
Authors coming, some influencers coming. And I'm right now like booking out the rest of this season.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to kind of figure out who do we really want to have?
When are you going to have Y and Naomi on?
It's so funny you say that because as you were talking, I was like, when are we going to have them on?
You need to.
I think it'll happen.
At some point.
Like with Kelsey Ballerini, when we announced All Our Favorite People, she was the first person to tweet back, like, I mm-hmm. want to be on the show. And it was only like now we're in season three that we finally were able to have the conversation. But it was such a great conversation about where she's headed in her next album cycle.
Yeah.
You know, it was really all about her relationship with her manager, Jason Owen, who's like, I call the diva whisperer.
It's true.
Because... you know,
we need
Shania,
to get him a sign made. Faith I thought about Hill. That yesterday after the interview. I was like, we need to get
or
Jason
like a tag on his car, DVAWHSPR.
Oh,
Diva, I'm all about That's the vanity lot. Plates,
the personalized license plates.
But yeah, so basically, if you want to check us out, we're at allourfavoritepeople.com.
Okay,
you can have we're on all major podcast platforms.
So Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts,
Pandora.
We're on Pandora. Okay.
Oh my God, Pandora's still around.
Yes,
oh, yeah, they're huge.
What?
They're huge.
What? Yeah. I didn't even know this. Okay.
So yeah, allourfavoritepeople.com and check
Are we
us out.
To say that on here?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll beep that out. Just kidding.
We might get edited for that.
We're on every major podcast platform.
And then where else can people find you guys individually?
So you can find me at Ashley Eicher. That's E-I-C-H-E-R on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Okay.
All the places.
And then AshleyEicher.com has a bunch of the dollar store.
Dollar Club.
Also obviously also need to eat.
Yeah, right? The Dollar Club stories. Yeah. And
the
I
dollar
need
store.
To update that.
Okay.
The website's about to get a revamp.
Oh.
She's forever revamping. You're
I always am too.
But it's hard. It's like, you know.
It's constantly updating though.
It's constantly updating. And I'm really not great at WordPress. I'm still trying to learn.
Me either. That. But I do it every day, you know.
No, wrong. You could teach me.
It's constantly evolving though. Teach it truly me. Is.
Well, and I think too, after redoing it last year, I'm like, this needs a, the way I want to do it is different. Mm-hmm.
Vision.
I got you.
Vision.
Okay, so Hunter, where can people find you?
On Instagram, you can find me at NashvilleHK.
Okay.
On Twitter, at Hunter Kelly. And on Facebook, on my public page, I'm just facebook.com/HunterKelly, K-E-L-L-Y. And please come join me on the Facebook page, because what happened at my last job was I have a bunch of crazy right-wing jobs following me.
Right.
And I am trying to remake it more in my own image, because I don't
love
feel...
that.
I don't really, it's really weird to have a following you're not connected to.
Absolutely. You need it
it's
to be authentic.
Really weird.
It doesn't work.
So I feel like I'm constantly trying to be like, I don't agree with any of you on most anything. I think you're all, you know, so it's really weird. So if you can go join the army of trying to remake facebook.com/HunterKelly in my image.
You also have a page for your dogs, your five dogs.
Yeah. Doxy Cam. So I do have five dogs. Instagram, D-O-X-I-E-C-A-M. Mm-hmm. Go follow that. We just post everything with the five dogs, and we're trying our damnedest to monetize those babies because... Oh. Some of them need surgery.
Okay.
Well, that one of them had surgery this year. We've had some close calls. Uh-huh. I don't want to talk about publicly.
Which is a great story. Actually, we'll tell you offline. But I will say, when you listen to our podcast, All Our Favorite People, if you hear his dog, if you hear snoring in the background at all, that's
it's
Hunter's
the dog,
Billy Jones.
So it's not you.
No. Billy Jones gets half a sedative from when we do our podcast, so that he's not up in people's lap. For car trips, he gets a full sedative.
Okay.
Because he has a lot of separation anxiety.
No wonder you need to monetize. That medicine's got to be expensive.
Well, and then the four Dachshunds are upstairs because...
I didn't even hear him at all when I was
over.
Yeah,
they're perfect angels up there.
Thank you guys for being here today.
Thank you
for having us.
I hope this can make
so
something
fun.
Coherent out of this.
I think we were going to go out with Love Can Build a Bridge, which I would
Take
greatly appreciate.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Wait, start it for me. Love can build a bridge between your heart and mine. Love can build a bridge. Don't you think it's time? Don't you think it's time?
Wow. What a note to end on. Thank you, guys. Thanks
Brotherhood
for
and unity.
Listen, should we make a group video next time? We'll
Absolutely. But we better get Y to do our hair. That's all I'm saying. Hunter, get on that. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. This is Kelly Henderson, and you've been listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. I truly believe that every one of us has a little velvet and a little edge. So it's so important to remember that to be strong, you must be soft too. Thank you so much for sharing in those stories with me. You can follow Velvet's Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as velvetsedge.com. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me every Wednesday for more conversations on lifestyle, beauty, and relationships. Thanks for listening.